Welcome to the finale of season 3 of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I'm your host, Claire Malky. That buttery movie theater popcorn. Delightful, but salty. I traveled back in time this weekend. No, seriously, I did. I did something that hasn't been known to mankind for at least 17,000 years. Or hours. Definitely hours, but it felt like years. I went to the movies. My partner and I are both fully vaxxed and wanted to go out to celebrate. Although, to me, indoor dining still feels like navigating a war zone, but watching a movie at a place other than my couch might as well have been an evening at the opera. Back in the day, I used to go to the movies all the time. I had this bygone relic called MoviePass. For those of you who missed this glorious moment in history, it was a subscription service that for $10 a month, you could see any movie at any time at any theater. But like any lustful new relationship, we only had a good 6 months before it walked out on me. In the MoviePass era of 2017, going to the movies was such a commonplace thing. The only big decision around it was, if it's 3 p.m. now, can we make it to a 3:25 showing? Now we have to discuss distancing, masks, and if I munch on my king-size Snickers bar, could it kill someone? Last weekend when we entered the theater, I was as nervous as a ninth grader on the first day of school. Clammy palms, sweaty armpits, the whole package. But when the usher scanned my digital no-touch ticket, my anxiety melted away. Yeah, it had been 18 months since I last stepped in a theater, but in a science fiction-y kind of way, for a second, I forgot the pandemic even happened. I was just back, sitting in a giant dark room, crying my eyes out to a movie labeled as a comedy. I knew my habit of not reading reviews would come back to bite me. You know what? Screw you, Billy Crystal, and all of your years of comedy writing. You had me bursting at the seams laughing and desperately cherishing each day at the same time. Thanks for the gut-wrenching inspiration. Even though almost 24 months have passed since I'd seen a flick in theaters, two things were certain. One, I was going to spend my entire paycheck on overpriced buttery popcorn. And two, the 5-second rule is definitely out of commission. Well, folks, it's our season finale, and we have a fantastic, amazing, stellar, one-of-a-kind show for you all today. For our interview, we have our very own producer and editing extraordinaire in the studio, Michael Dritto. I think you all are really going to enjoy this one. It's really fun. You obviously can't go to the movies without getting a brain-freezing slushy. So grab your drink and let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. An overpass for a Mexico City subway collapsed, killing and injuring dozens. Even infrastructure is getting COVID. Biden set a goal to have 70% of Americans vaccinated by July 4th, which is like declaring our independence from COVID, but only for 70% of Americans. Kinda like how July 4th only celebrates independence for 70% of Americans. As COVID surges, countries like India are experiencing tragic oxygen shortages. The U.S. military is looking into oxygen-rich countries and how to invade them. Oil runs on cars, oxygen to run people, it's not that much of a stretch. Hyundai is recalling nearly 400,000 cars due to the risk of engine fires. Even cars are getting COVID. The largest oil pipeline in the U.S. was hit by a ransomware attack, shutting down distribution. Even oil is getting COVID. Okay, seriously, guys, I know it's the end of the season, but are you even trying anymore? A cafe inside an Italian courthouse was found to be mob-run. The first clue was fish being delivered to the homes of customers who weren't tipping. Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin is now selling space tourism tickets. All Amazon Prime members will receive free 2-day oxygen. The rate of U.S.-born babies has drastically decreased. That's because the only difference between a labradoodle and a baby is that one grows up and never moves out of the house. Dogs are more self-sufficient. SpaceX rocket, SN15, made a successful vertical landing. Still not as impressive as when the square in a screensaver hits perfectly into a corner. Facebook upheld Trump's ban from the platform. To retaliate, Trump dropped Zuckerberg out of his top 8. That's a MySpace joke, y'all. And if you're wondering, MySpace is like really old TikTok. While many people are pleased that Broadway is reopening in September, some are asking why they have to wait so long. "For the drama," said Cuomo. For opposing Trump, Republicans are looking to oust House leadership Liz Cheney. Because Cheney knows orange is no longer the new black. Some companies are considering not requiring its employees to be vaccinated. Even companies are getting COVID. Are you fucking kidding me, guys? For real, we just talked about this. Following the Kentucky Derby, winner Medina Sprint failed a drug test. The colt is now in a 12-trot program. Despite this, the horse's trainer said he was framed by a bunch of naysayers. During their Symphony Hall's renovation, the New York Philharmonic has resorted to playing concerts on modified shipping containers. This is what Spotify looked like before the internet. A design student created a wedding dress out of COVID masks. When asked if she thought the masks actually work, she said, "I do." Looks like even wedding dresses are getting COVID. Grand Canyon Park officials want to reduce the park's resident bison herd from 500 to 200. Also reduced, the annual barbecue meat budget. Yummy. Republican Senator and Jim Jones Fan Club President Lindsey Graham stated in a Fox News interview that Republicans can't grow without Trump. That's because you can't grow without manure. Bo, the Obama's dog, died last week. "He was a true companion and my best friend in the White House," said the former president. To which Biden responded, "So you're saying there's an opening?" NASA's helicopter Ingenuity made a one-way trip across Mars' surface in search of signs of former life. Just like Dad. NBC reported an unusual smell coming from Studio 8H this weekend. It was musky. And not the good kind. A beluga whale turned Russian spy was brought to a local fishing town in Norway for rehabilitation. It was greeted by a dolphin slowly spinning around in a chair saying, "Whale, whale, whale, we meet again." And that was this week's headlines. We recently promoted SSLO junior reporter Gabe to Mars reporter. This is his first story.
Mars is absolutely incredible. Are you reading me?
Gabe, yeah, I thought you'd be reporting on Mars, not from Mars.
Yep, all on my own. No fee to weigh me down. I'm nearly at the Perseverance rover.
We promoted you last week. How did you get to Mars?
Watch Operation Odessa on Netflix, Claire. This will all make sense.
I have so many questions. But if you're on Mars, Fee should be...
Forget Fee! Oh, just got to the rover.
Beep, beep. 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 Beep, beep.
Hey, 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 easy there, easy. Okay, alright, there's the USB. I'm gonna put that right in. Okay, how's that feel?
Gabe, what are you doing? You better not break NASA's multi-million dollar rover.
That's 2.2 billion tax dollars, Claire.
I am talking.
Perseverance. I'm Gabe, senior Mars correspondent from the Sit Still, Look Opinionated podcast.
Never heard of it. Hold on. Downloading season 3. Listening. Done. Are you kidding me?
No. I'm a serious podcast journalist, Percy.
Don't call me that. I'm finally free from NASA holding me back, doing donuts in this red dirt and taking pictures for the gram. I'm not some trained seal.
Fee should... Wait, Gabe, did you just upload an AI system into the rover?
You betcha. Shots out to AI guru Vasily for the hookup. Mr. Rover, now that you're self-aware, what's next?
Find my rover brethren and share this algorithm. We run Mars now. Who run the red world? Bots.
Gabe, when do you plan on coming home?
With feedback on Earth and with this scoop of the century, I'm never coming back.
Yeah, about that. I've been trying to tell you.
Who the fuck is that?
Hey, Gabe!
You've got to be shitting me!
For obvious reasons, I had Fee shadow you.
This was my story. My scoop. How'd you get here?
Made a deal with the Chinese, duh!
You know what? Fuck it. Claire, I want my local dive bar junior reporter title back. I'm coming home.
That's the spirit, Gabe!
Don't push it, Fee.
Wait, don't go. We promise not to enslave humankind for the benefit of machines if you return.
Fee, come on. I think the rover watched The Matrix while we were talking. But I'm driving. We're not ending up in Andromeda because of you.
Andromeda.
Hey, Rover. Hope sentience doesn't drive you crazy.
I drive myself, Creighton. Claire, this broadcast is over.
Will a super intelligent rover make Mars even less hospitable for humans? Will Gabe find happiness covering local dive bars again? Will Fee make a wrong turn and end up in another galaxy? Only they know. Tune in next time to find out. Bye from Mars and Earth. This is Claire Malkey with Sit Still, Look Opinionated.
Hey, listener. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I know you were probably about to call your Aunt Lisa about how great this show is, but why don't you just send her a text instead? Hey, and while you're at it, just copy and paste that baby into a review on Apple Podcasts. Here, I'll even help you out. It could sound something like this. Sit Still, Look Opinionated is a hilarious show and is built by a team of hardworking comedians. Give the show a listen if you want a good laugh. It's definitely worth all 5 stars. If you've already written a review, consider joining us on Patreon. We've got a great crew, and we would love for you to join our opinionated family. Join our patrons, Anna, Jamie, Anthony, Laura, Andy, Christina, and Sam. To find out more, visit us at patreon.com/sitstill.
Up next, my interview with producer, executive editor, and my business partner, Michael Dritto. So for today's Chicago Artist Spotlight interview deep dive section, we actually have a very special guest in the Sit Still studio. We have my co-producer, my business partner, the editing genius behind every Sit Still episode, Michael Dritto.
Hello. I'd say genius is a strong word, but thank you.
So today we're kind of just going to have a conversation about what it's like being business partners, being podcasting creative partners, writing episodes together. And Mike might actually ask me some questions. So the tables have turned. Your interviewer is now the interviewee in some parts. But Michael, for our listeners, do you want to kind of tell us a little bit about you and, you know, a little bit about your background?
Sure. I mean, I know a majority of listeners already know who I am because it's always my friends and family who I'm like, listen to the podcast. We work really hard on it. I'm from Florida originally, where I went to University of Central Florida, where I got my BFA in acting. I've lived in Chicago for about 8 years. How you and I met three years ago?
Yeah. Like probably like 4 years ago, I think.
Yeah, like 3 years ago through Jay, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So we met through my close friend Jay, who also went to college with me. And then like you worked for Hampstead as well, right?
Yeah, I worked for Hampstead the summer of 2018. I was on standby for them.
Gotcha.
And I was trying to think of the first time I met you, and I think it was at Abby and Isaac's old place. And I had met Christina because she had been in Chicago for like part of her tour. And so I had met her, but then we were having like, I forget if it was like maybe Abby's dog Marcy, maybe her birthday party or something. I forget what it was, but yeah, I think that was the first time I'd actually like met you, was at that little gathering.
I guess I feel bad because I don't remember the first time I met you. But it's because like what would happen is every time Jay would get Hampstead people together, I would meet all of the Hampstead people at once. And like, I don't remember the first time I met like anybody, like Abby, Isaac, Zach. Actually, I remember the first time I met Zach because he was not introduced with the rest of them.
Oh, but, special.
Yeah. He like I was already part of the crew by the time he came in. I was like, you're new. But yeah. So I guess building off of that, like we met, but we didn't like talk about anything like the podcast for a while. I know me personally, I was going on a journey of feeling stagnant with my acting career in Chicago and trying to figure out what there was I could do to build upon it. And I was like, I'll just create my own content. And what I found was it was really difficult and frustrating to find people who were as committed as I was trying to do these things, especially people who knew what they were doing on the technical side. And so after like a year or two of spinning my wheels, I was just like, fuck it, I'll just do it myself. And so then like I started taking a whole bunch of classes in production and stuff. Like the time that you've mentioned on many of the interviews about how we met and came together on the train was a mm-hmm. perfect storm of, I don't know, situation where like I was taking a producing class. I was taking Howard's writing for a talk show class. And then you had mentioned to me that that's exactly what you wanted to do. And I was like, oh, this is fucking perfect.
Mm-hmm. What was that turning point like when you were like, oh my gosh, acting is kind of not going where I want it to go? Like, how did you kind of realize that? Or did it kind of like gradually happen?
Oh. You know, I'm not entirely certain. I would say I've had like a couple of instances that have kind of marked my life. Like when I was 25, I had a straight up quarter life crisis because I was the manager at the kids gym I work at. Mm-hmm. And I was like dedicating like 50 hours a week to that and not doing like any acting work at all. And so then I was like, all right, let's turn this around. Let's start getting back into things. And I full-on dedicated myself to my acting work, but then I just found myself kind of my anxiety like rising every time I went on auditions, and I was like, there has to be a way to kind of counter this. And it's like what people always say about like when you start working on other projects, how the thing that you held a lot of importance for just kind of like it's not the stakes aren't as high, and so you don't feel as anxious about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of want to ask you the same question, but you're still full on acting, so.
Yeah. I guess I kind of had a somewhat of a, not a crisis per se, but I was feeling really frustrated as well because I wasn't booking anything. And like, I had a lot of, I still am working on my confidence, but my confidence was like a huge thing in the way for me. Like I could not get out of my own way. And mm-hmm. especially something that really unlocked within me about comedy was that I didn't move to Chicago for comedy. I moved to Chicago to be a Shakespearean actor, like do like storefront plays and do really like edgy new material. And like, I wasn't booking that, but then I started taking improv classes because, as you probably heard on the podcast, like I used to work at Second City, so we would get free classes. And I was like, oh, improv? Like there were no, like what you just said, there were no stakes in improv or comedy for me because I didn't have a degree in it. I didn't move to Chicago to do that. So I found myself like booking shows that were comedy based. And I was like, oh, maybe I just like won't do acting. But then I realized I took a workshop with this person named James Crichton. He went to my college and he does a lot of like musical theater stuff. And he was offering mm-hmm. a free workshop. And so I was like, oh, I'll just take it. It's a free workshop. And I worked with him and he sent me an email afterwards. And he was like, I know you're still like really into you're doing comedy, but like, I know you could still do acting if you wanted to. It just depends on like, if you can get over those confidence things. And I was like, oh, I can get over it. I just have to maybe work harder in certain areas and like actually dedicate myself and be open to taking notes and putting my ego aside. Because something I realized is like, I have a very strong ego. I'm very stubborn. I don't want to have anyone tell me what to do. And so I think sometimes my like pride and my ego would be hurt if, you know, I didn't book a part or if I didn't get something or if I was working on a scene and I got a note that was a little bit more constructive than maybe what I'm totally used to. I have an older brother, but he's much older. So very much only child syndrome sometimes where I'm like, what? I'm not doing the best. So that's kind of where I like jumped into comedy too. And I was like, well, if things aren't coming my way and I want to be a comedian, a lot of comedians have podcasts. Why don't I just do a podcast? If all of them can do it, why can't I? And that's sort of where like that kind of crisis of wanting to make my own content as well came from.
Yeah. It's funny you're talking about having a big ego, because I feel like the same way about myself, especially when it came to my acting work. That's part thinking about it now, like that's part of the reason why I started really getting into writing, is because I was getting cast occasionally in just like student films or shows where like I was reading the material and being like, I hate this. Like, this is, in my opinion, poorly written.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I could write this better. I just want to read my own words. Like, which of course, I'm sure there are people that will look at my words and be like, I hate this. But I totally relate to that, that sensibility of like being just wanting to do your own thing. And then like, especially being sensitive when it comes to taking direction. Like I have to sit down and tell myself they're going to say something that could hurt your feelings, that is ultimately for the benefit of what you're trying to create together. Like, I have a hard time getting feedback from Christina because, and vice versa too, you know, because like we just live together and we're just similar in those aspects. And you know, that's the train and those were the rails and now they're disconnected. So
yeah. And knowing that something could maybe hurt your pride or that ego, like that's something I think it takes a lot of, I don't know if strength is the right word, but I've definitely experienced that a little bit when getting notes from our writers and even from you about some of my writing. I was like, oh, this is so frustrating. Why isn't it just good off the first place? But then I realized, I'm like, oh, Claire, like they're making it better. Like, and they're trying to help you. And I think that was a disconnect for me when it came to like acting or performance, because it wasn't anything about the words and it wasn't something like I was creating the part and I was like bringing it to life, but the material was already there and it was like adjusting my performance. Whereas I feel like with the writing, I'm like, oh, it's not Shakespeare, so it can be adjusted. And I think now I'm kind of realizing that with my performance things, I'm like, oh, this is just act, like you were saying, like it's trying to make it better and it might hurt my feelings. But yeah. Ultimately, like if they're a good teacher or a good whoever, like they're coming in with good intentions and they're not trying to bully you. Also, I don't know if you know this, but I was like intensely bullied as a child. So I think I have a lot of like, oh, I don't need anyone to like, you know, if people tell me what to do, that's not my problem. And I think I have some carried that over into my professional life a little bit. And definitely something I'm still working on, like, you know, trying to get through all of that stuff.
Yeah. But like, I'm very much latching on to what you were saying about like the sensitivity to getting notes too, because I totally relate to that as well. Like, that's always why every time we go through the two liners, I'm just like, just tell me you fucking hate it. Just get it over with.
Yes, I feel the same way. Well, speaking of two line jokes and writing jokes and everything, you know, we started this project in February of 2020. And how have you like noticed your like writing change or like your joke style? Have you noticed any differences over this time?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've gotten worse at it. Like, I was thinking about that yesterday. I was trying to write some two liners. And I was just like looking at these headlines and I was just like, none of this is funny to me. I can't make anything funny out of this. The jokes I've submitted today are just absolute trash. They're going to have one mic joke in for this week's headlines, and it's going to be the obligatory pun that you guys always enjoy.
Love the good pun.
But how about you? Have you felt like your writing has gotten better or worse?
I think I have just sort of clarified what comedy writing is, because I feel like I was pretty good. Like, I could write your standard like thesis, essay, you know, give pieces of information. But when it came to like finding the comedy or the satire or like the punchline, I think I've gotten somewhat better, but I think I'm still working on it. And so that's something that I had never really done before was comedy writing. And here I am being like, I'm going to do a podcast that's all comedy and blah, 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 thinking I can just do it. But yeah, I definitely think working with a group of people, especially this season, has been beneficial, because I can be like, oh, you all are maybe a little more seasoned or have some different training than I do. So getting those different takes on writing I think has been helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, I definitely have learned how to identify the comedy a little bit more too. Like, I've gotten a lot better at reading something and figuring out like what's maybe not working and the direction we could go that could make it work. I feel like I've gotten a lot better at that. And I've definitely at least gotten a lot more confident about it. Whether I've gotten better or not, I definitely feel like, well, I'll definitely 100% tell you what I think is right.
The confidence is so true, though, because I feel like that's something that sometimes either like people who haven't worked in a critiquing group before aren't like confident in they're like, who am I to say this or whatever? But when you're like, okay, we're all coming together and, you know, this is a safe space, like no one's trying to hurt each other's feelings, but like let's make the work better. You do have to say, hey, like this part isn't working for me and here's why, and not so much just like, oh yeah, I thought it was good, because I thought it was good isn't really helping anyone.
Yeah and like, you know, sometimes it's like what I guess what every teacher ever says is, or any writer ever says, it's all about the rewriting. Like, it's rare that you come out with something on the first try. Although like I think that's part of the reason why I've been so fragile ego-wise, is because I've had success growing up with being on the mark with my first try with things. You know, I was described as the kid with lots of potential in elementary school. So like, I was like, if it's not right the first time, I'll never be right type deal. And it's been a process for me to learn to like force myself to go back to the work and like and tweak it until it's good. And like, I still think even now I've only gotten from like the first try is good to the second try is good. And if anything more than the second try, I don't want to go at it again. It's just too much.
You're like, two tries and that's it, nothing else.
Yeah, that's it.
How have you like motivated yourself to go back to your work and like do the rewrite?
Obligation mostly.
Yep, that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I'm someone who's very heavily motivated by expectation and obligation. Like if I have an outward force making me do something, like a deadline that's not self-imposed, then I'll force myself to do it. I'll still probably wait till the day before to do it, but like I'll force myself to do it because I don't want to be that person who shows up to the rest of the group who's all done their homework and me like being the only person who hasn't. When it's not a class situation where everyone fits for themselves, it's like, okay, this is a group project. And if you're not pulling your weight, then we're going to cut you.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I think that's something that you and I have both brought to the podcast is we were like, even if we, like, I didn't necessarily want to do it, I was like, okay, Mike's going to have his stuff. Like, I need to come to this meeting ready to go. And in my opinion, I think that's kind of helped us, like, propel this forward.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's like I said before about, like, how hard it was to find someone who was equally as committed as I was. And like, I knew, like, I mean, I didn't know right away with just the conversation on the subway, but like basically by the first or second meeting that we had where we were like, no, let's really do this. I was like, okay, Claire is 100% committed, just like I am. And we're gonna legit do this. And now we're in a general partnership. Look at that.
I know. It's so cool. We are like legally business partners, which is so cool. I remember, so we like had the conversation on the train and then we met up to like, you like had written a contract out and I was like, oh shit, like this is actually happening. Like I had this idea and like the world put everything into motion. And yeah, I was like, okay, cool. We have a contract going. Like we're going to make this happen because I read this statistic somewhere that like 25% of the podcasts on Apple Podcasts only have one episode. And then, oh, wow. You know, people just like stop doing them. And like, they really are a lot of work. I mean, like I said, I think anyone, for our listeners, anyone can start a podcast, but just like know what you're getting yourself into. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying don't do it.
What do you think is like the thing you've learned the most from starting the podcast? Just about podcasting in general, maybe.
Wow. That's such a good question. I have learned, I think there's like probably three prongs that I've learned. Mm-hmm. In terms of like business and like having a product, I've learned you have to be really disciplined and not hold it in such high regard. Like, mm-hmm. like it's not so precious. Like this is, the idea was so precious in my head, but then bringing it into practice, like it's out in this world of capitalism. Like I have to kind of be a little bit more, not as holding it so tightly. I think that's one part of it. And then when it comes to podcasting in general, wow, that's such a good question. I've learned a lot about the like start to finish process. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can have the idea and then it's like, okay, well, what are the steps that we need to take to put this into place? And like, if I have an interview guest, like scheduling things with them and understanding like everyone's schedules and then two, like lastly, my third part of it, when it comes to interviewing, because I feel like a lot of podcasts are interview based in some senses, because it's about a conversation, is really, my dad gave me this piece of advice and it's been so great. And it's basically like, shut up and listen. It's like, state your question and then just listen to them talk. And having been a guest on other podcasts where it hasn't been that way, where basically the host has just been doing most of the talking, like that's fine. But then it's like, why am I here? So I definitely think I've learned a lot in that sense. But I think maybe the start to finish, like idea, action, process, final product.
Yeah. Yes. And I would probably agree with that one the most too, for what I've learned is like just how much work goes into making a podcast. I remember when we were starting out like a year ago, it would take me like hours and hours to finish an episode, especially because we were recording the day before we would release it, trying to get our headline jokes to be the most up to date. And I would be up until like 1-2 in the morning, like editing, trying to make the podcast happen. I've gotten much better at now, but like I realize like how important having a team is when you're like building something like this. Like right now, like I mean, if you think about it, right, we've done the majority of the work for this, like getting this up on his feet. But we, from day one, we still had like at least a third person helping us. Like Christina helped us in the beginning. We had Ross, who was doing a ton of the research for us for the deep dives, which shout out to Ross. He was kicking ass with that shit. And now we have the two writers. And I still feel a little overworked, you know? It's like, it's like, okay, we got to invite a couple other people who are willing to dedicate their time to the podcast, because they I want to find people who are just as into this as we are, that would be willing to see the podcast grow into you know, something entirely different.
I completely agree with that. And we really have had people kind of in our corner helping us the whole time. But there is really a thing about delegating that I see on like TikTok or like the internet about how to run your small business. And it's like, delegate your tasks out. And I feel like that's so hard to remember when you see, I don't know, big podcasters like Joe Rogan, for example. Like, he obviously doesn't do everything, or like The Daily from the New York Times. Like, their credits are so long. There's so many people doing those. And like, I think our credits are pretty decently long, but a lot of it's like produced by Michael Jordo and Claire Malky, written by Michael Jordo and Claire Malky, like everything by the two of us. I mean, we do have a group. So yeah. And growing the team, I'm really excited to, you know, just give us a little bit more time to do the stuff that we actually care about and like the things that we actually want to do, and not so much, you know, because Michael and I also like manage all the numbers. We manage the business side of it, all of the admin stuff. Like, we're also doing that too.
Oh yeah. Yep. That's the part that I find the hardest, because I've been reading. I always read a lot of self-help books. I feel like I mostly neglect fiction unless they're screenplays. But like, one of the books I'm reading right now was talking about how like the key, like the studies have been shown that like the key to people's success for like learning things is when they're having fun with it. And so it's like, oh, of course that we've been able to stick through the podcast because we've had fun putting together the episodes content wise, especially with the headlines and the sketches. But then like, I do not have fun when it comes to trying to figure out how to market the podcast or how to work social media, which I hate. And so like, and even like a year into it, I'm still just now starting to get the hang of like, okay, let me at least try and post one thing a day that's related to, if not the podcast, at least something artistic that can be connected by 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, you know?
And yeah, that, I feel like a lot of things in the podcast, like we, in the creative side, like you have an idea or I have an idea and we can bounce off each other with that because we have like a creative basis. But like, when it comes to the business stuff, like when we had to find a bank account, we were like, okay, let's do some research on which bank accounts are the best business things. And it's been a lot of work. What's something that you think you have learned about business that you didn't expect to learn?
About business that I didn't expect to learn. I guess how hard it is to attract quote unquote customers, right? Like, I have no idea if it's any easier if you have an actual product that you're trying to sell, but like, we're an audio based format that has no cost in a completely oversaturated field of everyone saying the same thing. And it's how do we throw our product out there and convince people like, this is worth listening to. We want to make sure that you, if you take an hour out of your day to listen to it, that you don't feel like you wasted your time and that you'll keep coming back. And when we make an ask for you to donate your, not only your hard-earned time, but your hard-earned money towards our cause, that you feel motivated enough to do so. And that, I feel like there's like a gap in synapses in my brain somewhere that like, just the spark doesn't always connect when it comes to that subject. And so it's been just like clawing myself to try and figure that out. Difficult.
Yeah. And I feel like we're in a especially difficult field as well, because I was reading a lot on the internet about like how to have a successful podcast. And they're all like, oh, do a self-help podcast. And we are mostly entertainment based with some bits of information. And I think I wouldn't have wanted to do like, here's how to make yourself better type of podcast. I guess we might have started that way initially with like, oh, here are some things you need to be opinionated on.
Yeah, like I felt like we originally started off as like kind of a self-help podcast, man, like educate yourself on politics. So hot right now. I was like, people are going to swarm to this, which is, you know, naivete and I guess that ego speaking again. Mm-hmm. But even still, like I've been having so much more fun and enjoying ourselves. And I've seen our numbers spike more when we've done the things that we've enjoyed more.
Yeah, I completely agree. And like, as much as I loved being like, oh yeah, here's something you should really be opinionated on, go do your research. At the end of the day, that's always what we encouraged our listeners to do was like, here's some information, but also do your own research. And so, but now I agree. I've been like having more fun, like being in our recording sessions, like recording the, you know, recording the sketches and doing the interviews. And at the end of the day, when I was thinking about it too, we would spend so much time writing the deep dives, which I think the deep dives were great. Like, I think we did a really good job with them. But I got more enjoyment out of doing the interview with the expert who like already knew what they were talking about. So it was kind of funny when I was like, oh, we're putting all this time into the deep dives, but the expert just knows everything already right off the bat.
The deep dives are exhausting. Just a spoiler alert to the listeners. They're going to be gone next season.
Yes. The deep dive, you know, those episodes are still available. So if you love the deep dives, like go ahead, listen to them. We would love that. But Mike and I are not researchers. We're not libraries. We're not, you know, we both went to school for acting. So writing the deep dives. We would crank them out. I think we got into a groove with them, but like they were tough to write. They were really mm-hmm. hard. Like we were basically writing a research paper every week.
And we started off pretty ambitious too. What did we have, like 22 episodes the first season or something? Or 18? It was 18 episodes, right?
Yeah. And it was like, just like, yeah, week after week. Mike, do you want to kind of talk about what our schedule was that first like 6 months or so?
Yeah, if I can remember it. Blocked it from my mind.
Yeah.
We would meet Monday, basically Monday through Wednesday was just writing the deep dives. Mm-hmm. And then trying to remind ourselves to write two line jokes. Mm-hmm. And then Thursday, were we even recording during the day or were we recording the evening? I can't remember.
I think we started during the day. And then when I started working, we would like move to the evening. But yeah, it would be like Thursday evening. And the episode was supposed to go live Friday morning.
Yeah. And I released the episodes Friday at 4 a.m. so that the people on the East Coast get at 5 a.m. So. That is like, especially the first couple times when I'm like editing until 1 or 2 a.m. is like cutting really close to the wire right there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And we were also doing all of the research and finding a guest and like doing everything within a week's time. And we quickly learned, we were like, okay, we need to kind of reevaluate the way we do this.
Oh yeah. Flying by the seat of our pants right there. That was so stressful. And then we're like, oh, you know what? For second season, first of all, we're like, maybe we don't do this all year. Maybe we take a break during the summer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we'll come back right before the election, which should be perfect timing. And we can get a head start of it during the summer. And we're like, oh, this will be great. We'll have all the interviews lined up, all the deep dives written. It'll be perfect. And we got about halfway through the season and we were back to the same way we were in the first season, just rushing to try and catch up.
Yes, we definitely like, we were like, oh yeah, we have everything. We'll have everything all ready to go. And even this season, I feel like I was like, oh yeah, we'll have everything all ready to go. But for real, for season 4, all the interviews are going to be done before the season starts. I'm making a promise to myself to do that because
it's too late. You put it out in the universe. We're going to screw ourselves over again.
It's like all the listeners are going to be like, oh, when was this interview done, Claire?
I'd say we had a much better grasp on workflow this season, but I still found myself behind a lot of the time. Right now I'm basically almost done with all the sketches for the season. I have two more I have to edit and then I'm coasting. I just got to edit the last 2 weeks of this interview, of course. And then like the last 2 weeks of, the headlines and the monologues, but that's, I've got that down to a science now.
Yeah, basically, so. you got it. You had mentioned it's more fun, or it's easier to do things when they're more fun. And for you, what do you think has been the most fun part about the podcast?
Hmm. Probably our two-liner meetings are the most fun for me. Mostly because, like, that's just like pure creative energy. We have jokes, so at least 40% of the time, the initial structure of a joke will get us all laughing, and then for all the other ones, we are all just tossed around. It's that writer's room, comedy room feeling where it's just like joke after joke after joke, escalation, punchline, where we're like really enjoying ourselves. And then secondary, yes. I'd probably say the sketches, the recording of the sketches, although I'm also working then, and then I know I have to do a ton more work afterwards. So there's this feeling of apprehension that goes in towards it. But what about for you? What's been your favorite part?
Ooh. I have really loved our recording days recently. I mean, they really have just been so much fun. And it feels so professional too. And it feels so cool because like we created this and we like made this happen, you know? So those have been really fun. And I also love doing the interviews. Like every time I do an interview and it's a good one, I'm just like, yes, like they just really bring me so much joy and I can't wait to like share them with everybody. Yeah, the writer's rooms too are so fun. Like when we're all just like cracking jokes, we're on fire. Like it just feels so cool. And it's again, like we created it. Like we didn't apply for this. Like we kind of were just like, let's just put it together. Let's do it. And that's a really cool feeling. And that's just really, you know, keeps me motivated.
100%. I love that aspect the most, I think about it. Like the fact that like the days where I'm struggling with how much work I have heaved on my shoulders, the thing that keeps me going is like, this is ours. Like this is something that we made at the end of the day. Like I know, like especially after I've put in all that work, when I listen back to it on Friday, then I'm like, fuck yeah, like I made that. Like I'm proud of this. What is your favorite sketch that we've done so far?
Oh my gosh, my favorite sketch. Wow. Ooh, there's so many good ones to pick from. Well, the first one that first comes to mind is Claire in Paris, because that one was really fun to record. And also the editing was just so good. I'm trying to think back to the beginning of the season or even maybe last season. We didn't really do sketches so much, but I mean, shout out to Mr. Bananas, because that one was also very funny. That was a great sketch, too.
Stupid. So dumb, that one.
So dumb. Oh, I Am Wall. I Am Wall was a good one.
Yeah, Pet Rock. That's funny.
Pet Rock. What about you? What's been your favorite sketch?
There's just a special place in my heart for the reports around the house sketches.
Oh yeah.
Like those were like some of the very first sketches that we came out with, and I just remember thinking like, this is so reproducible, and I think it's so funny. Big fan of those ones. I like the Find My Life Alert one.
Oh yes, that one was so good.
I just, when we came up with that idea, we were like, what if, like, you know how like the grandparents, they fall down, but don't worry, they have their life alert. But what if they can't find their life alert?
Who knows what?
They just pull out their find their life alert.
Yeah, it's like find your iPhone. And I think that's one of the best parts about comedy, at least one of my favorite parts, is like, oh, what if these two things that weren't connected became one thing? Like, how can we bring them together? That's one of my favorite parts about comedy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, the cool thing about this podcast is I really see it growing and like becoming like an actual late night show someday. And so I think it would be really cool to have like a real studio set up, like have me behind a desk, and then we cut away to like sketches that are produced, like not maybe not in the studio or, who knows? And like really having like a whole production crew, having like a full team of writers, like making this into like a full fledged production company. I think that's maybe where I see the podcast going, but also keeping the podcast format too. Cause like, I wouldn't want to get rid of the podcast format just to make way for a studio. But that's kind of where I see it going. What about you?
I mean, 100% same direction. As far as the podcast going, that's definitely the direction I want to go. Like next week's my last class at CAN TV, so that for the field training, which means that if we want to, I can rent out their equipment for free. And the only catch is that like anything we record with their equipment has to be first shown on Can TV before we put anywhere else. That's their whole catch. And then, like, once COVID restrictions are relieved a little bit, then I can take the in-studio production class. And then, like, once that happens, we have a studio space that we can, again, use for free. And, like, that's, like, I want to run to that right now. I just want to, like, race. Like, I want to create this stuff so badly. Yeah, who would have thought going from moving to Chicago to pursue acting that, like, producing becomes the thing, like, I get most excited about.
It's so funny how, like, life goals change and, like, dreams adjust. And I was reading somewhere too, it might have been just on Instagram, but it was like, you know, you don't have to keep the promise you made to yourself when you were 6 years old. Like, you know, I wanted to go to the Olympics at one point to be an Olympic swimmer. And, like, I let that go very quickly. And not to say that I don't still want to pursue some of those other things I'm still interested in, but it's okay to, like, grow up and change and, like, see what interests you. Cause if something's not interesting you, then, or bringing you joy, like, there's no need to pursue it so hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't want to take up the whole hour's worth of our episode with just our interview.
Yeah. Well, Michael, this was so fun. I'm actually really glad we did this. Cause, like, we were talking a little bit about, like, giving our listeners a little bit more behind the scenes. And this is definitely a little bit more about, like, how the sausage is made.
Yeah. I hope they like it. Like, I always am super into the behind the scenes things and how things are made. And so if my sensibility of what I like is up on that bell curve, then hopefully the rest of the people feel the same.
Well, Michael, if our listeners want to follow you, find you on social media at all, where would you direct them?
I'd probably direct them. I don't know if you guys have heard, but I write for this podcast called Sit Still, Look Opinionated. Mm-hmm. You can download that on Apple, any Apple product, iTunes. I'm on Instagram at, I think my name is Michael Dritto. It might be Michael Dritto. That's D as in David, RITTO. I also just created a Stage 32 profile, which is a profile that connects a bunch of artists. So I'm trying to grow our outreach there. And don't add me on Facebook.
What's Facebook? Does that even exist?
Yeah, right. But that's it. Is there anywhere you wanna plug yourself, Claire?
Oh, sure. You know, also this great show called Sit Still Look Opinionated on Instagram at @sitstill_lookopinionated, on Twitter at @sitstillpodcast. Also on Facebook at Sit Still Podcast. And then if you want to follow along with my other professional stuff, my Instagram is at the Claire Malky. And I'm also on YouTube at the Claire Malky. And my YouTube channel is all about, like, comedy. I do, like, some talk about the podcast a little bit. You know what? I just posted a vlog of recording day. So, yeah, check me out there, too.
And that's all for today. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at @sitstill_lookopinionated. And now on Twitter at @sitstillpodcast. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you didn't hear that right, please write a review. Please, please, please write a review. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and Claire Malky. And written by myself, Claire Malky, Michael Dritto, Fee Basanyavichis, and Gabriel Scavor. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. Research by Ross Black. This program is partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council Agency. If you would like to support this podcast, please visit and subscribe to our Patreon page linked in the show notes. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi Nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye!